you think your world is safe. It is an illusion. A comforting lie told to protect you. Enjoy these final moments. For I have returned. So, shall we begin?
All right, ladies, buckle up! It's showtime!
Several years ago, a friend of mine had a burglar on her roof. A burglar. He fell through the kitchen skylight, landed on a cutting board on a butcher's knife, cutting his leg. The burglar sued my friend. He sued my friend, and because of guys like you, he won. My friend had to pay the burglar $6,000. Is that justice? No.
I'd have got him 10.
Classic line from Jim Carrey's Liar, Liar. Actually, you know, it's so funny because a lot of people don't know this, but that scene in Liar, Liar where Jim Carrey is talking to his secretary and she's talking about her friend having to pay a burglar $6,000 because he cut his leg on a cutting board actually happened. He broke into the woman's house, fell through the skylight, cut his leg. He sued the woman, and he won. He got it. You know, he, of course, ended up doing jail time for breaking in, but because he cut his leg, he was able to sue, and he did get $6,000, somewhere around $5,000-$6,000. And when Jim Carrey says that great line, it's like, is that justice? He says, no, I'd have gotten him 10. But it's based upon a real story. I'll never forget the first time I saw Liar, Liar in the theater, and she says that line. I couldn't help but say it, and you know, I didn't mean to be, but I'm one of those guys in the movie theater. I'm going, oh my God, that really happened. And people are like, shh, because I couldn't resist. It was like, that was a real story. People think that that's a joke, but it really happened. There was another case that was very similar to that, where a police officer was chasing down a suspect, and he rammed his police cruiser into the suspect, trapping him against a fence. And he broke the suspect's leg. He was indeed robbing someone, sued the police department, and he won. Now, look, folks, I'm only saying this for one real reason. Okay? I've thought about this. That was the reason why I found the clip today, because it's been going through my mind forever and ever. I think I'm going to sue the New York City Police Department. I think I have to.
For what?
False arrest. I mean, think about it on this scale, folks, and you tell me whether or not I'm out of my mind or not. I've never had this in open discussion. In a little bit, I want to talk about the Redskins. That was what I really wanted to start off with. But when I thought about this audio, I wanted to bring it up. The detective in my case, Detective Robert Arbuto, ended up being the only defense witness in my trial of March of 2011. After further discussion with my attorney, David J. Cohen, the detective, Arbuzo, started to express further and further doubt about the claims being made by my accuser. And as he went on, going through his notes and the testimony and her changing of her testimony when she got on the stand, here it was a detective who, in essence, is the catalyst to any criminal charges being filed by the district attorney's office. I mean, he is the catalyst. The police arrest, the district attorney's office prosecutes. Now, if the district attorney's office is going to use witnesses, of course, they use the accuser, and then they use the police department in their investigation. But the police department, in this case, was then thrown into question by the district attorney's office. They brought Robert Arbuzo into the office, their office, and questioned his validity. Detective Arbuzo was outraged at the fact that he had worked with his district attorney's office in the sex crimes unit for 9 years, and here it is, they're questioning the veracity of his claim made by my accuser. So the police department is now saying, look, we did our investigation. We did what it was that we were supposed to do. We went down there. We arrested him. We questioned him. We thought he was the person who committed this crime. And then we hear all of this changes. And now you take us off the witness list, the police department. In essence, you have discredited the police department. You cross-examined the police department on the stand. And the police department says, look, this is what she said, and it's not the truth. That's the reason why we're testifying for the police. We're testifying for the defense. You didn't even want to use us. You don't believe us. You believe the witness over that. So I'm thinking, with that in tow and us having the testimony of the police department has clearly lost faith in the prosecutor's claims, but it is their initial investigation that's faulty. Prosecutor only gets their information from the investigating officer, unless the prosecutor is then going to admit that they took it out of the hands of the police department and investigated it themselves.
What?
I want to hear a counter to my claims.
It's not a counter.
Oh, it's okay.
The deal that you took.
Right. Has nothing to do with my arrest.
But are there stipulations in that deal that say that you cannot sue?
I cannot appeal or sue for the charges that I pled guilty to. But the top charge is rape, and I spent – okay, let's say this. Okay, so the maximum for the charge that I pled guilty to was a year. Which would have been good time, 6 months, 8 months at best. Would have been a city year.
Okay.
I spent 2.5 years
in jail.
So if I were to sue the police department, it would be predicated on the charge that I was held on bail, $300,000, $100,000 cash, right? It was a bond of $300,000, $100,000 cash. I'm put in jail where I can't make that bail. I spend 2.5 years in jail before I reach trial. And then later on, those charges are dropped. And why are they dropped? Primarily because the police department who had charged me. Remember, all they had to do was give me. Remember, you dropped the charges of the rape. Why do you drop the charges?
Because you have no case.
Because you have no case. And what's the mitigating factor of that case? Is that the police department doesn't believe the witness and they will be testifying in court
on
my behalf. So the police department, separate from the district attorney's office, I can't sue the district attorney's office anyway, but the police department and their investigation, which is what it is that they're supposed to do, turns out and says otherwise.
Well, if we can sue them, hell yeah, let's do it.
Now, the problem is that how do I find an attorney
that's going to take the case without one.
Well, anybody will take the case. You know, all you have to do is just, I mean, in essence, you tell an attorney that you want to sue the police department for the charge and the fact that, I mean, our evidence is clear. Would the arresting detective get on the stand and say, I have no faith in the claims that were made by the witness and we ended up testifying against them? In essence, I would end up winning at trial in a civil case.
Okay.
So the New York City Police Department would have to settle out of court.
No, we would have to move back to New York to do that, right?
Not necessarily. I don't have to be there for that civil case.
Why?
Why would I have to be there? I don't have to be there. A lawyer would be there and would be the person who would, in essence, adjudicate this.
Well, I think you still have to be there.
I don't think so, though. That might be true. You say that like you want to move back to New York. I'm listening to you.
I'm telling you that I'm not doing the back and forth shit anymore.
I know you don't want to do that. That was tough.
It was too hard. I could not even I did work, but I mean.
Was that really driving you off the wall?
What?
Going back and forth.
Yeah. So wasn't that driving you off the wall?
Anyway.
Wasn't it driving you up the wall?
Oh, I hated it. Don't get me wrong. I couldn't stand it.
We would go to New York and come back in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, it's amazing. We would do that run, what, a good 12, right?
Every month.
Yeah.
Once a month.
Well, that was because we wouldn't even stay in New York. We refused. As soon as we got out there. Well, no, there were some days where you didn't have to go back to work, and you and I just looked at each other and just said, I don't want to be here for another couple of hours.
Not because I had to climb a gazillion stairs at your mother's house.
No, well, you didn't like my sister's house either.
Yeah, no, six flights of stairs, no goddamn elevator, are you kidding me?
Yeah, my sister lives in Harlem.
She has a beautiful apartment
she does.
In Harlem.
Yeah, she lives in off Lenox.
She has no elevator.
My sister lives off 137th Street in Lenox. And if you're familiar with the Harlem area, she lives in a six-floor walk-up. And if you live in New York, you know that it's nothing but a walk-ups in the New York area. So
I mean, how do disabled people live there?
They don't.
Hey.
Generally, the people who live in those apartments are...
We should sue the apartment people for not being handicapped accessible.
You know, that's interesting, Mary, that you say that.
Because
with considering...
Right. When you get a permit, even to put in a business...
A pool, for crying out loud, at a hotel.
When you get a permit to put in for a business, you have to put... That's why if you go into most businesses, if you use their bathroom, they have a handrail on the side
right.
and a rail in the back of the toilet.
Right. Handicap rules have made it difficult for some...
Accessible.
Right.
But that freaking building is a handicap accessible.
That's
so
interesting.
If I'm handicapped and I'm in a wheelchair or whatever, I can't even get up the front steps to get into the apartment building, no less get to any floor other than the
and it's interesting that you say that because the building next door to my sister's building, you notice that both of them on either side of her building have ramps.
Yep.
And my sister's building does not. It says it's got about 4 or 5 steps to get up into the building.
And she's got that hoarder that lives downstairs from her.
On the fifth floor. Right.
That everything, I mean, by the time you get to the third floor, thank God you can't breathe because then maybe you can't smell the shit coming out of that apartment.
Yeah, it's funny because when you go into my sister's apartment, my sister's all the way on the sixth floor and you have to go all the way up. But when you get to the fifth floor.
And we're not, and really it's 12 land. It's got to be 12 landings.
Well, it's 12 landings because there are two sets of steps for each floor.
Exactly.
And I think, in fact, I counted her steps, and I think it's a little over, I'm almost certain it's a little over 68 steps.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's 68
for
steps
anybody.
To get up there, yeah.
Even someone that's in great shape. You imagine having to do that every time.
Oh,
imagine having to carry clothes and groceries.
Laundry.
Furniture.
Laundry,
I mean,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. But anyway, when you get upstairs to my sister's, when you get to the fifth floor, the woman who is this hoarder, if she keeps her door open in her apartment at all hours of the night. You can look right into her apartment because it's kind of a railroad deal
in
her apartment.
No, you can't look into the apartment because you can't see anything because she's probably back to the
ceiling. It's clothing to the left, to the right, all over the place.
And
I don't know how she walks through it.
Garbage right in front of her door.
Yeah, and she put...
You have to climb over the trash to get
right.
to the next...
Yeah, she's got garbage out on the landing when you walk up to the fifth floor by the apartments because when you go upstairs, it's 4 apartments, 2 on either side at the top of the steps. And you guys are familiar with these buildings, especially if you're in the Massachusetts area. You've seen these kind of apartments before. But when you go up there, she's got, like, shopping carts with garbage bags and stuff. And she has to put signs on them that says, not trash. This is not garbage. So it's pretty bad.
But you're, it is garbage, but she just doesn't
want to
get rid of it.
Right. She, yeah, right, but...
Storage
yeah, garbage is in the eye of the beholder.
I mean, what happens if somebody that lives here breaks their leg? There's no elevator. How are you going to go up and down those stairs and get in?
You can't be carried. It's funny. That's funny that you say that, but you couldn't be carried in a gurney up and down those flights of steps because the width of the stairwell is so thin.
You could potentially die.
Yeah, you probably won't make it out of there.
You know, by the time they do get you down the stairs, you know, you could be dead.
Well.
They could be dead. All of you would be dead.
Sal says, breaks their leg. These people are the folks that start these apartment building fires. You're absolutely right. That's what my sister's the most worried about, this hoarder that lives downstairs. In the event of... you know, something burning. I mean, this woman, first of all, the woman would be trapped in her apartment.
She doesn't live there. She never stays there, Christine said. She only comes there.
No, I see. I see her. I see her often.
Christine told me that she does not stay there. She has another apartment.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I always tell them they've got to call the Daily News or the press or something like that and get that stuff.
Well, the Daily News doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, well, anyway. But like I said in the beginning, I'm thinking about – I think it's appropriate at this particular point. It's been about 2 months, a little over 2 months now, and I think that I should at least file a civil case against the New York City Police Department. If anybody knows someone who might be able to help, assist, give me some information on what it is that I should do, please contact me at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com if you know. And I don't know. I think I'm going to do it. I thought about maybe even calling the American Civil Liberties Union, but I wouldn't call those people to scratch my ass, to be honest with you. So I'm not going to bother. Anyway, top story today. I saw this in the news this morning. It was the first story that I read, and I had already heard a story that prefaced this in the New York Times, I'm almost certain it is, if not the Washington Post. It's one of those freaking liberal rags. But the story is about the Washington Redskins, the football team for any of you living under a rock. The Washington Redskins have for years been getting a lot of beef about their name, their moniker, the Redskins. This story comes out of the Washington Post this morning. Redskins' name change could be discussed, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray says. The Redskins' resurgence as district politicals once again has district politicals once again talking about what it would take to relocate the team back inside the city limits. But Mayor Vincent C. Gray today suggests there would have to be a controversial prerequisite to any stadium deal, a name change, or at least a discussion of one. As Cortland Malloy reminded the Washington Post readers today, the Redskins moniker has been under fire for decades for being plainly a racial slur. The team, under the ownership of both Jack Kent Cook and Michael M. Snyder, has resisted making a change. Quote, I think they get serious with the team coming back to Washington. There's no doubt there's going to have to be a discussion about that. And, of course, the team is going to have to work with us around that issue. Vincent Gray noted that many sports teams, including the Washington Bullets, have discarded offensive names and or mascots. Really? Your team's called the Washington Bullets? Well, now they're called the Wizards. But when they were called the Washington Bullets, the only reason why you changed the name was because you were the murder capital of the world. It wasn't over racism. Anyway, he says, quote, I think it has become a lightning rod, and I would love to be able to sit down with the team and see if a change should be made. There is a precedent for this, and I think there needs to be a dispassionate discussion about this. And do the right thing. The mayor did not go so far as to call the Redskins' name a deal breaker, but he did obliquely reference that the federal government, not the district, ultimately controls the land on which RFK Stadium now sits, and on which a replacement football stadium would most likely be built. Recall that the Redskins, under a vowed racist owner, George Preston Marshall, did not field a black player until 1962. Well, that's a way to make your point. After Interior Secretary Stuart Udall threatened to deny the team the use of what would later be named RFK Stadium unless it integrated. Really? That's interesting. Anyway, could a future federal official pull a Udall and threaten to keep the Redskins off federal land unless they change their name? That would indeed be a deal breaker. In other Redskins related comments, the mayor discussed Robert Griffin III's knees. That's not important. Now, folks, I look. I don't understand why the Redskins would be considered an offensive word or a name for that matter. If the Indians referred to themselves as Redskins, that would obviously to me say, what's the big deal? What's the big whoop? Now, we don't use other terms to describe teams. I don't think that there's any term out there, with the exception of Indian names or Native American names, to describe teams. Let me see. Let me break this down. Let me see. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Let me go there. The Oklahoma City Thunder. This is an offense, of course, because there are no people involved. Supersonics, which used to be their team name, clearly inanimate object. But what about the Utah Jazz? There's no jazz in Utah. I mean, would it be offensive if they were called the Utah Mormons? I mean, would that be offensive? I don't know. Is there nothing derogatory about the Mormons? Can you call a team the Utah Mormons? Why were they called the Jazz? Shouldn't PETA be upset at names like the Chicago Bulls? How about the Chicago Bears? How about the Buffalo Bills? Wouldn't these things be deemed as somewhat offensive?
Says, not for repeat, I agree. The name is truly offensive. How about the Utah?
The Utah Jizz.
Oh, that was
considering how many children the Mormons have, Utah Jizz would be a perfect name for them. But that's just ridiculous. That would just be ridiculous. But I don't know. I'm stunned by this argument about the Redskins. There's no other teams that use any Native American monikers. I know they use a lot of animals. I can't even think of one. I can't think of any others that are. What about college sports? College sports use it. Hey, the Cleveland Indians. The Cleveland Indians. Are they going to force people to change that name too? Can we not even reference the word Indians? I wonder if that's quite possible.
We can't do anything because we live in a pansy state.
I know that. wait. Of course, White Mike writes in. He says, "Of course, you know they used to be the New Orleans Jazz." Pistol played for them. it's funny because the fact that they moved to Utah and kept the name Jazz, and not one person said, Utah? Jazz? Nah, I don't think so. But I don't think anything else would have possibly been appropriate there. It boggles the mind as far as I'm concerned that anybody's talking about changing the Washington Redskins. But what would the name be changed to? That's the great question here. You know, we have the Washington Nationals. I do remember when they used to be called the Washington Senators. Not when I say I remember, I wasn't there, but you know what I mean. I know they were called the Washington Senators. Of course, they were called that because it stuck with the theme. It's Washington. But what would they call this team? You have the Washington Capitals, the hockey team that's there. What would you name them? if people want, you know, you have to get something that's catchy. We've seen this before. Teams have changed their names. You know, the Tennessee Titans, you know, the Houston Texans, these are all new names. You know, you can come up with a, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Are there Jaguars in Jacksonville? I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering. And what does a Titan have to do with Tennessee? Just wondering. Because I don't think that there's any way whatsoever that you could, I don't think there's anything that you could give, what name I should say, that you would give the Redskins that would be appropriate for the Washington area. But anyway, we'll get back into that. I want to talk about the pimp of the year, or as many people are calling him, the father of the year, William Jefferson Clinton, folks. If you heard about him, William Jefferson Clinton. We'll read the story when we come back. Being called the father of the year. I don't even know how to respond to this. The father of the year. How it happened, I don't know.
Who else was nominated?
I don't know. That's exactly why I want to go into it when we...
Mickey Mouse?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know whose idea this was. But Bill Clinton is being called the father of the year. He's got one daughter, Chelsea Clinton, and if that's enough for me, if that's enough for them, I guess it's enough. We'll get into that when we return. Here's the police. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll be right back. oddly enough, that group out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, Passion Pit. I fell in love with them back in 2009, 2010. I love that damn song. The Reeling. Get a new album out. I'll actually play another song on this. There's a real popular song now called Take a Walk. They're playing now. Trees on the Radio. It is 35 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is January the 10th, 2012. The number is 347-308.
Thirsty.
347-308-8701. Sally D had a great crack here. He said, speaking of crack, he said it should be called the Washington Crackheads after Marion Barry buys them. I don't think he's got enough money, Sal.
Yeah, you might be right. He's got some bad habits, so you might be on something there. You know, I know the topic is about the name of the team, but I'm just going to steer you a little bit away from it for a second because I want to get your opinion on something.
Sure.
So with this Hall of Fame vote the other day, obviously it was a kind of a rare occasion where no one gets in, let alone the class that was up for the vote. So real quick, where do you stand on that? But then there was a point I wanted to make about it.
Well, that's a great question because, you know, I thought about it yesterday. We got caught in that deep conversation because I did plan up bringing up the Hall of Fame vote, which I was a little caught up in that story as well. And you heard about the New York Times cover that says, and the inductees are, and the entire page is blank. That was amazing that I saw that in the paper. But I was so impressed by two names not making it on the list, and the fact that they couldn't even get 50% of the vote, and that was one Mike Piazza, formerly of the New York Mets, and Curt Schilling. I mean, these are two guys who were far beyond the scandal of the steroids era, never implicated, never even once even thought to have been involved in that, and they couldn't get 75%.
Well, yeah, but you know, you've got to look at history, and a pitcher like Schilling, with the amount of wins he has, no pitcher has gone into the Hall in the first ballot with his stats. The reason people look at Schilling the way they do is because of the money games he's won.
Right.
But now back to Piazza. Piazza's a different story, but the story there is a lot of people look at Piazza as a guilt by association thing because of who he was hanging around with at the time and his stats and his physique. So a lot of people feel, although he was never convicted or found to be on steroids,
was he ever even implicated? Sal, was he ever implicated at all?
No, but I got to throw something out there. I had this conversation with someone the other day.
Sure.
Roger Clemens is absolutely being kept out of the Hall, and he was not found guilty. Okay, he's guilty in the public opinion area, but he was never found guilty of anything, correct?
Well, this is true. Right. In a court of law, he has not been found guilty at all.
And so the thing about it there is that it raises an interesting question because here's the problem I have with all this. And I'm torn as well because I'm a big sports – I was a big baseball fan and kind of got away from it when they just tore McGuire and Sosa to shreds. I kind of was heartbroken over the whole thing as a fan of baseball and really looking up to these guys, and then to see them just torn apart because they made a mistake. It's just – I believe as people, we all make mistakes. We deserve a second chance. And I thought Mark McGuire basically came clean and, you know, he asked for forgiveness. He felt terrible about it. But let me ask you this, and this is the part that really bothers me. Why are they focusing on baseball? I love people are pretending that football isn't probably 70 to 80% steroid, maybe 90% steroid use. Are you going to tell me that people don't think that steroid use is rampant in the NFL? But no one seems to have an issue with it because their drug testing policy is so lax.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because, you know, you look at a guy like Romanowski from the Denver Broncos, who clearly everybody knew was using. And this is a guy who I know will never, ever reach the ranks of the NFL Hall of Fame. He won't. It just won't happen.
That's right.
But I think that if you were to look at the inductees over the past 20 years in the NFL, could you say that any one of those members who went in, with probably the exception of Shannon Sharp, that looked like he used steroids. And the only reason why Shannon Sharp looks like that, I mean, he looks like a big son of a gun. He looks a little abnormal at best. But if you look at some of the guys who have gone in, Barry Sanders, you know, you don't get the implication that guys like him use. You know a guy like Lyle Alzado used.
You know, I don't know if I buy that. Because if you remember or really think about Barry Sanders' physique, he was ripped. His legs were just like Earl Campbell. You know what I mean? He had, his legs were gigantic. And so just because he was short, and, you know, it might have given the impression that he... But that dude was seriously jacked. Who else? Who else can you think of?
Emmitt Smith. What about Emmitt Smith?
Okay, so Emmitt Smith, I would agree with you. There's nothing about him when you look at him that makes it look like he was on steroids. But, you know, consider the position. I don't suggest that running backs by default need to take it. I think it definitely gives them an extra step. I think guys on defense... absolutely. Guys coming back from bad injuries, absolutely. And obviously the guys that are just so ripped and huge, it's fairly obvious, you know, that they're using something. You've got to figure. But would you agree at least that it's got to be around 40 to 50%?
I would probably go with 40%. I'd probably agree with you there. Maybe 40%.
Now, why isn't it a problem, and why don't people have an issue with it? And I'll tell you what, because nobody got caught yet. See, people aren't actually angry about steroid use. What people are angry about is you ruin their game.
Sal, I think the reason why baseball got the attention that it did was that when you look at the average baseball player over the years, and I'll go decades and even over the last century, the baseball player has a physique that is beyond the scope of guys like Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, Jose Canseco, Roger Clemens, Jason Giambi, those guys, Sammy Sosa even, those guys were hulking sizes where you've got other guys who look like Ken Griffey Jr., I'll even go Ichiro. These guys are small in build and or stature. When you look at a guy like Derek Jeter, that's the average size of a baseball player. But when you look at Mark McGwire, when you look at guys like Sammy Sosa, when you look at guys like Jason Giambi, another perfect example. You look at those guys, those were hulking figures.
Right, but don't forget, look at a David Ortiz, okay? You look at David Ortiz, he doesn't look like a guy that did steroids. He's a big guy. But they know he did it. He was caught. He was one of those players that was on that list.
Right.
That eventually surfaced. And although he wasn't formally called in on it, everybody knows he was on that list. There are players who take steroids and lift. And those guys that are gym rats end up looking like Hulks. But there are plenty of players who take steroids that don't look like Hulks. But what it does is it gives them extra speed in the tendon, in the muscle. They don't get injured as easily. They recover quicker. And the statistics are skewed. So for me, the steroid issue in baseball is the fact that they made it an issue. It is now an issue that has ruined the game, because you will never be able to look at records ever again going forward and not say, yeah, you know, he hit 72 home runs, but, or so-and-so hit 55 this year, but back in whatever year it was, you know, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa both hit 70 or whatever. You see what I mean? It's forever ruined the game. Whereas with football,
here's where I disagree with you, because here's where I think really changed the dynamic of this particular class of people who were elected to go into the Hall of Fame. And it was that Senate confirmation, or that Senate hearing, not confirmation, sorry, that Senate hearing, right, that subcommittee hearing, where Rafael Palmeiro Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, Sammy Sosa, they're all sitting there. And guys like Rafael Palmeiro waving his finger at Congress, defiantly saying, I have never, ever used performance-enhancing drugs. And what, a month or so later, couldn't have been any more than 6 weeks later, he gets busted using performance-enhancing drugs, and he's forced to quit. Mark McGwire refusing to answer questions that night, that day, when he was on there saying, I'm not here to talk about the past, I'm not here to talk about the past, completely evading any and every question. Sammy Sosa, a guy who's done national interviews on the national stage in front of a news reporter, brings in an interpreter to distance himself from answering direct questions. And then the creme de la creme of all of this is what I say, what really put the nail in the coffin of this whole thing was the Brian McNamee hearings between Roger Clemens and him, where Roger Clemens had that press conference where he recorded a conversation with Brian McNamee. And Brian McNamee is on that audio, and I'll never forget it because this happened in 2008, and when I was on WRKO, I interrupted my program to play these hearings live on the air. And here it was, Brian McNamee talking to Roger Clemens, and Roger Clemens is saying, I'm sick and tired of all these people lying. And Brian McNamee responds on the phone call, lying? You're saying that I'm lying? And Mark McGwire says, no, I don't mean you. And who was the primary witness against Roger Clemens? Brian McNamee. And Brian McNamee saying that, look, I did steroids, I got the evidence.
Yeah, see, I think we're both saying the same thing. I just didn't say it the way you said it. What I'm saying is that what bothers people is that when this thing blew, it forced them to look at these men that were heroes, that did great things, that did amazing things that you could, you know, revel in, and you were forced to look at them as the faulty human beings we all are, protecting themselves, lying to protect themselves, looking less than, you know, heroes, basically. And so from that point on, the game was forever tainted because you realized it was almost as if the veil had been taken off. You know, when Jack Kennedy was having all these affairs, it wasn't reported, and there was a lot going on with him, but it was a different age, so everybody looked at Kennedy like he was just a god. It's a different age, and we enjoy tearing people down. Once you do it, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And I think that's why people don't care and don't care to know about the NFL issue. So
but
that's
Sal,
what I want to get
think,
at. It's that, so
you think
keep
that
these guys out of the hall, and I guess you had to, right?
Yeah, but look at it this way, though. If there is a microcosm, if you will, of people who are achieving great things, right? They're doing astronomical things on the field, and they're being revered, talked about, getting public opinion. People are buying their jerseys. They're admiring them. There's a culture of fame that goes, of course, with these accolades. And then you find out that this person had an illegal edge, if you will, that they did something or took something to give them that edge. Remember, what most people genuinely like about a guy like Mark McGwire beforehand was saying, wow, this guy is good. He's better than all the rest. I like him because he's so talented. And then you find out it's not talent, that it's cheating, that it was an aggressive pursuit to do better than everybody else. And you hear that and you get, it's not about watching or tearing people down. It's having your hopes depleted. And it's part of our fault because we put people on pedestals. That I take full responsibility for when you do that. But when you find out that this person had done it in a way that lied to you or cheated, and people feel cheated. They don't feel cheated about the game. They feel like they've been duped. and people don't like to be duped. That's the part that bothers people the most, is that I idolized you because, or wanted to be like you. I played harder and tried to, you know, take on your way of doing things, became a better human being, tried to give back, tried to give more to the game, really think about my team. You inspired me to do that. And it turns out that that was all a fallacy, and that let people down, and that's where that anger sort of persists from. I mean, isn't that fair to say?
Oh, I agree. I think we're agreeing again, but looking at it from a different prism. But okay, let me ask you this, and think about this. I want you to think for a second before you answer the question.
Okay.
Go back to the day before this whole thing broke. The first, say, well, Canseco started it, but let's go back to the Maguire-Sosa race, okay?
Well, never forget.
I remember
watching that,
and I never was as excited as I was to watch a regular season baseball game when these two guys were playing. So I'm going to ask you straight up. You're sitting there. You go back in time. You have the option to know what you know now and have baseball what it is now, or you have the option to never find out and let this thing run its course. Don't, you know, let's assume if you had the choice as a viewer, not as a man worrying about kids getting on steroids or, you know, the record, you don't know. Would you rather have never known and baseball just continued with this incredible, you know, high-energy kind of game where these guys were bigger than life, or would you rather know what you know now?
Oh, that's a great question.
I would rather not know. Now,
that sounds a great question.
But I'm telling you right now, that's entertainment to me. These guys are not role models. And even if they were, to my son, if I didn't know about any of this, you know, what is life other than a series of experiences? To me, baseball, when I watch it now, not only is it tainted because of what happened, because you'll never look at someone again, even if the guy's hitting 46 home runs, and he's, you know, and it's happened. I think one guy had over 40 home runs this year. Did it get much press? Absolutely not. Why? Because someone hit 70-something home runs. And, yeah, he was dirty, but he still hit 70-something home runs. So I would rather go back. I would never want to know, because now baseball will never be the same. The sport for me is ruined because you just can't put that thing back. You can't take it back.
Yeah, you don't like the fact that, and this is exactly where I'm conflicted, and I hear it. I hear the question loud and clear. You're conflicted, I should say. You're conflicted because here was something at a time where the sport was exciting. It was getting the attention that you always knew it deserved. More and more people were involved in it, and baseball was hot. I mean, it wasn't the boring game that a lot of friends were telling you it was. Oh, I don't watch baseball. It's too boring. Everybody was excited about it. They were all inspired by it. And you're asking the question of saying, would you rather have been in that state of your life where you were excited and enthused about the sport, or would you be now, would you rather be in a world where you're cynical and skeptical about somebody achieving some feats of strength or some sort of feats, where would you have rather have been? And it is a tough question, because would you rather have skepticism or wonder? And you know what? I'll be honest with you. You know, I think I'm with you here, Sal. I think
yeah,
I would
please.
Really, really appreciate, because that was a great feeling, Sal. You can't match it. That
no,
was,
it was unbelievable.
I wasn't a St. Louis fan. I wasn't a Chicago Cubs fan, but that was a regular season game. It was on prime time, and I was watching that game in Buffalo, New York, and I was glued to it. And the scary part about it, though, I always watched baseball since I was a kid, but I don't think that since the 86 series with the Mets and the Red Sox, I don't think since then I had been excited about baseball the way I was when I watched that game between St. Louis and Chicago. I don't
Absolutely.
Think I've ever
and I,
been that excited.
I am convinced that's why people just don't want to know in the NFL. And I'm going to tell you something else. I think the NFL is structured so that the NFL doesn't know. because they're smart. Yeah, could you clean up the NFL? Absolutely. What will you have? You will have your, you'll probably have by the middle toward the end of the season, maybe, you know, 30 or 40 guys that are key marquee guys out on some kind of injury or hobbled. Is that what you want to see? And see, the NFL quietly knows this, and so their drug testing policy is a lot more forgiving, and it's harder to catch them. That's not by chance. You know, it's not by chance. The Major League Baseball went on a witch hunt, and they got what they wanted. And what I'm saying is, be careful what you wish for, because you're never going back.
Yeah, we'll never. That's the scary part, though. You know, with all of that that happened, I think it'll take 20 years. It'll be 20 years until, and it's been, what, 15 now? Almost 15 years since that happened? It'll take another 20 years for baseball to separate itself from that era and to get the stars or the accolades that it had. I think it won't even be half of that excitement that it was back in 1997-98.
You're absolutely right, because they will not perform the same way. I don't care. You know, take 30 years. You know, people say that generations, athletes get bigger and stronger. Well, if it's natural, you know, maybe in 200 years, we won't be here. So this will never happen again. The game, if you've noticed, has slowed down quite a bit. And
right.
It's
funny, isn't it amazing that the game
it.
Has turned into it's turned into a pitching game now? I mean, now the game is about pitching. It's not even about home runs. It's about fielding now. It's really now the game is more focused on defense than it's ever been in my recent memory.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just say that, hey, you know, it's not as exciting to me, and I love baseball, and I followed baseball my whole life, and this game is not the game. And, you know, back in the 70s, when Ian, let's assume that the majority of the players are clean in the 70s, the reason the game worked back then, you didn't have the specialties that you have now with pitchers. So now they have this guy come in for three innings, and then they follow it with this guy, and then you get the closer in for an inning and a half, and he can give you, like, 80 games closer. Well, at the end of the day, you're shutting guys down now, because instead of hitting it over the fence, maybe they're 10 feet short. Instead of lining it through the infield, it's getting caught. And so the game has changed, and I honestly do not believe it goes back ever, and that's why, for me, it angers me, and I'll never be the fan I was. And you know, when this vote happened, I was really conflicted, and I still am, about the vote itself. Because I'm a firm believer that 40 to 50% of the major league players were probably taking it, like Canseco said. A portion of those players were already very good, and they just got better. But at the end of the day, you're punishing the players who probably would have made the Hall because they made a stupid mistake, and they did. But I just, you know, you got to do something because you know. But if you didn't know, I'd go back. And I'd do it all over again and enjoy the game. And when these guys' livers started failing at 50, that's their choice. You know,
yeah.
And a lot of these NFL players that are, like Al Zadel, like you talked about. I mean, there's no proof there, but there's a real good possibility his steroid use didn't help. That's for sure. But, you know, that's the choice he made, to live as high as one can live and to play like he did. As a viewer, I feel gypped. As a father, I don't want my son ever considering the steroids, and that's the other piece of it. Now
yeah.
that they know the steroids were done, it's an incentive.
And
yeah. these kids are on the bubble.
It's true. You're absolutely right. All right, I promise I got to get to Bill Clinton when we return. Stick around. We'll go to the top of the hour when we return. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Sal is 100% right on this one. We'll be back.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, I was absolutely shocked at the revelation that Jesse Jackson Jr. is accused of spending campaign finances like a recent lotto winner. But what really shocked me was in the midst of this scandal, the people of Chicago reelected him, only for him to resign a week later, costing the state a fortune in special election costs. Jackson will soon be joining the prestigious list of Chicago luminaries like Dan Rostenkowski and Rod Blagojevich. And since no one is responsible for their own actions, not even voters, I would like to propose that Chicago open up a felonious politician museum. This way they can pick up some lost revenue that's been pilfered from the people. And make sure to leave room for expansion for more Chicago heroes like Axelrod, Emanuel, and Obama. I'm Chuck Woolery. And I think I just said that with my outside voice. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
You know the damage one ignorant Negro can do. We were in France in the First War. We'd won decorations. But the white boys had told all them French gals that we had tails. Then they found this ignorant colored soldier. Paid him to tie a tail to his ass and run around half naked making monkey sounds. They put him on a big round table in the Café Napoleon. Put a reed in his hand. Crown on his head. Blanket on his shoulders and made him eat bananas in front of all them Frenchies. Oh, the white boys danced that night. Passed out leaflets with that boy's picture on it. Called him Moonshine. King of the monkeys. And when we slit his throat, you know that fool asked us what he had done wrong.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. 2 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. January the 10th, 2013. I want to go look this up to find out who these people are. The National Father's Day Committee is an entity of Father's Day, Mother's Day Council and exists for the purpose of conferring Father of the Year honors on contemporary lifestyle leaders of our culture. The council is a not-for-profit, non-commercial organization with a philanthropic goal. The funds raised by our annual Father of the Year Awards presentation are directed to the main support of worthwhile concerns affecting men, fathers, and families. The objective of this 72-year-old program is to enhance the meaning of Father's Day, Sunday, June 16th, 2013, and to encourage universal observance. The chairperson is a man by the name of Dan Orwig, and the beneficiary, of this year's honor is one William Jefferson Clinton. He is being touted as the Father of the Year.
Based on what?
Well, it says here, Save the Children works to break the cycle of poverty and improve the lives of children by ensuring that they have the resources they need, access to quality education, healthy foods, and opportunities to grow and develop in a nurturing environment. When disaster strikes like hurricanes and wildfires, Save the Children is among the first on the ground ensuring the needs of children are being met. Save the Children's early childhood education, literacy, physical activity and nutrition and emergency response programs reach more than 147,000 children and families in the United States last year alone. I don't know why exactly Bill Clinton has been honored, but they say that he has been. And according to this, the group selected Clinton for his profound generosity, leadership, and tireless dedication to both his public office and many philanthropic organizations. Daniel Orwig, as I mentioned, chairman of the National Father's Day Committee, said in the announcement, the award will be presented at a luncheon in June, and the father of the year is Bill Clinton. I believe, personally, that Bill Clinton deserves a much more esteemed honor. The last time this award was given to Antonio Fargas back in the 1980s. Bill Clinton deserves it this year. The pimp of the year. That's what Bill Clinton is. Now, look, no one has ever once equated William Jefferson Clinton with being the father of the year. And if he has been, when and where?
And the father of what year? 2013?
Apparently father of the year 2012, because he's being presented in June of 2013 on Father's Day.
And whose daughters?
Well, that's the part that I don't seem to understand, because the one thing that would take him out of the running is to take a 20-year-old girl in the Oval Office and dip cigars into her vagina. A woman who is, at the time, I believe, let's check, hold on, wait. No. I want to make sure that I got this right. I don't want to.
No. I heard that too. No, but I mean, is that the aspiration of Girl Scouts?
Well, no. That I don't know. Okay, Chelsea Clinton was born February 27th, 1980. Right.
Okay. That means
so
she's,
that
what,
would make her age today. 80, what, 90, 2000, 2012,
yeah.
That was 32?
Yeah.
That would make her 32. Okay. So if that makes her 32.
17 years out of the running.
No. Okay. Monica Lewinsky is 7 years older than her.
Okay.
So Monica Lewinsky, the scandal took place that her relationship with Bill Clinton took place between 1995 in November. Her birthday lands when? July 23rd, 1973. Okay, so 93 would make her 20?
Yeah. Yeah.
93, so 22 years old.
So we're making the dad line at 20 to 22.
Well, 22 years old, and you're an intern in the White House, and your daughter is, as I just suggested here, 73 to 1980, 7 years, right?
Right.
All right, so 22, 7 years. Your daughter's 15 years old, my friend. Your daughter's 15 years old. And you're taking a 22-year-old girl, and you're doing all unspeakable acts against her in the White House.
Well, listen, in some cultures, Chelsea herself was ready for a box of cigarettos.
Apparently. I just heard of some Saudi man just married a 15-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without question. In some cultures, if you're not married by the time you're 14, 15, you're an old maid and nobody wants you.
But, you know, I look at this and I'm going, Father of the Year Bill Clinton, were there not? Now, this may be a problem on my part, folks. this may be a problem on my part. Okay? I'm going to go and say, I'm going to search most popular fathers of 2012. Gonna look this up. Let's see if we can come up with.
And they're giving him this award
some of
this
the biggest,
year.
Say again.
They're giving him this. This is a fresh award. This is not like some headline from back in 1997.
Oh no! I understand that, but they're saying that this year Bill Clinton is the father of the year. Were there any other prominent fathers who deserved the accolades more? Were there fathers out there who deserved better than, who deserved this more than Bill Clinton?
Does he have children that we don't know about?
Bill Clinton's got one daughter who's 32 years old.
Married to some rich Wall Street guy?
Yeah, he's some hedge fund manager. Bottom line is that Bill Clinton hasn't been a father in 13 years?
Yeah, like I said, 13 years. If we're making 20 the daddy cutoff line.
Yeah, we got to make 2021 the daddy cutoff line. How can he possibly be eligible some 10 years later?
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, come on. A father of the year is somebody, you know, maybe a guy from Afghanistan, you know, who went and fought, you know, 4 or 5 tours in Afghanistan. Why wouldn't that guy be father of the year? I mean, haven't we had any stories about fathers that we literally had to work? We had to really go down to this level and elect Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
There are no better fathers?
Yeah, the guy in Afghanistan who's got the 16-month-old at home that he hasn't seen yet, the child was born after he had gotten there, and yet he's over there saving orphanages.
Yeah, I mean, but again, a father of the year should be somebody like, you know, who's not that he's just taking care of his own children, and I don't want to say he's like, oh, you know, he's a great father to his kids. That seems ridiculous. But if we want to take the example of, like, who the father of the year is, I'll give you a perfect example. And I know I'm going off the deep end here. Okay? Let's take the father of somebody like Tim Tebow. Now, hear me out when I'm saying this, okay? Right? Think about what I'm saying here. I'm going to go Tim Tebow here for a couple of reasons. Tim Tebow's dad has Tim Tebow out there. He worked as a missionary in the Philippines. He does work with his dad and his mom. Right? I mean, he does. He's out there working with underprivileged kids. I would go so far as to say Tim Tebow's dad was a perfect, oh my God. I just found out why I love Tim Tebow. I don't know how this happened. Mary, are you there? Do you want to know Tim Tebow's birthday? It's August 14th. Tim Tebow and Reese on the Radio have the same birthday. I knew there was something I loved about that boy. And he played, well, he doesn't play football like I do. I love you, Tim Tebow.
Yeah, but you know what? The one element that I'm not hearing from you about this whole fatherly thing is like, there's no father element to it.
Well, I mean, think about it. If Bill Clinton can end up being the father of the year, that means that there were, I mean, think about this. I'm sitting up here, I don't even know who's a popular father of 2012. We got no stories about popular fathers. When we talked about fathers this year, yeah, the guy, that's right. We got stories about fathers. We got a story about father where the father shot up his daughter's computer because she was talking smack about her family on Facebook. Remember that story?
Right, right.
And do you know, Tim Tebow was born in Makate, Philippines. He was born in the Philippines. Does that mean he's not even an American citizen? Wow.
Over here praying, right? Over here throwing balls and praying illegally. Hey, listen. what about the kid? Remember the kid last year? Uncle. Beat his ass for what he put on Facebook.
Really? I don't remember that.
Remember he kept saying that the kids kept saying that he was a gangster, and his uncle beat his ass and made him take it off of Facebook?
Oh, I don't even remember that story. He said some father who beat his kid's ass for saying he was a gangster on Facebook. Oh, how about the father last year who made his son walk around with a road sign in Florida? He had a big giant sandwich board.
Right.
In Florida, he made him walk around and let everybody know that he was failing in school. And the black father was standing out there saying that he was telling his son that we don't tolerate that behavior and punished his son. I mean, there are no stories about fathers. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, the reason why Bill Clinton got this award was because there were no stories. I'm looking at this and I'm going, I've heard no great father stories in the last year.
Cookie Monster is more deserving than Bill Clinton.
But I'm saying up there going, maybe it was because this group couldn't find a father that was a standout. I've never even heard of this award. I mean, I don't even know who the past recipients are. I mean, who are the past recipients of the Father's Day Award? I mean, is there a list at all? I mean, I don't see. I'm going to look. Okay, Father of the Year.
I have 2011. Disturbing story, dude.
Father of the Year 2011. Looking at the list here.
Gosh, you're even prettier than your picture.
Oh, yeah.
This is no. No, that's actually something completely separate. Father of the Year, this is in Australia. Peter Andre, crowned Father of the Year, second year running. This is in the Mirror, UK. About the Father of the Year Awards, I'm looking at this. Okay, here we go. Okay. All right, here we go. I'm going to go from 2000 to 2012. Bill Boggs, Paul Sharon, Smokin' Joe Frazier, Walt Clyde Frazier, Jay Johnson, Gerald McRaney. 2001, Jim Fossil, former Giants coach. George Foreman. Andy Pettit. Michael Powell. Russell Simmons in 2001. 2002, Michael Bloomberg. Alonzo Mourning. 2003, Patrick Ewing, Steve Young, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, 2004, Tommy Lasorda, Richard Petty. Isaiah Thomas. Who's this? Let me see. 2005. Larry King. Are you kidding me? Larry King. Donald Trump. What? All-Star Dad. Daniel Sullivan. Now, folks, in 2006 was a banner year, folks. A banner year. Jack Klugman of The Odd Couple. Archie Manning, famous dad of Peyton and Eli. Todd Smith. If you're wondering why I'm mentioning Todd Smith, is because Todd Smith, folks, father of the year, was LL Cool J is hard as hell. Battle anybody, I don't care who you tell. Yes, LL Cool J, named Father of the Year in 2006. Whoa. 2007. John Edwards. Hold on, it gets better. Tom Glavine. Hulk Hogan.
No. Pull that. Who?
What?
Who?
2007, John Edwards, Tom Glavine, Hulk Hogan, Dwayne Wade.
Who the hell is voting on this?
I don't know. 2008, I didn't know this man had kids, Randy Jackson. Jonathan Tisch, George Stephanopoulos, Coach K, Mike Kaczynski. Wait, General Petraeus. In 2009. That was 2009. 2010, NBC Meet the Press host David Gregory. From the New York Yankees, Jorge Posada. 2011, Jim Boeheim and Amari Stoudemire.
Wait.
It gets better. 2012, Shaquille O'Neal.
Wait. Who the hell is voting on this? Joan Crawford?
These are fantastic. Excuse me.
Did you hear me?
What'd you say?
Who the hell is voting on this? Joan Crawford?
Yeah, exactly. These are amazing candidates. Amazing, amazing candidates.
What is the criteria?
I don't know. Apparently there's some sort of just committee that just votes.
Grace, hold on. I've got to listen to a little more pressing. I really want to show you this. It's going to flip out. Hold on.
Okay. Are you sending it to me? Because I'm going to go to a break.
Yeah, I'm on
the
Facebook.
Now, by the way, that Larry King won Fossil of the Year, not Father. It was a typo.
Go on.
All right, well, send it to me.
I don't see that you're on.
Say again?
I don't see that you're on.
Oh, no, I'm on. Just send it to my Facebook account. I'm there. We'll take a break. Again, here's from Cambridge, Massachusetts, one of my favorite groups. They got the biggest song right now with this one right here. It's called Take a Walk. I'm sure you've heard it everywhere. Here's Passion Pit right here on Reason Radio.
We'll be right back.
Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Reseller Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Wow, we're in stereo.
Returns right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Walking down Fifth Avenue. more than combat gives you to command. Takes more than a license for a gun. Confront your enemies, avoid them when you can. A gentleman will walk but never run. The manners make us manners, someone said. He's a hero of the day. Takes a man to suffer ignorance and smile. Be yourself, no matter what they say.
The police. 37 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com on this January 10th, 2013. Week's almost over tomorrow. That's the end of it. We'll wrap it up. That'll be the end of it. Not a lot of things coming up, of course, this week. By the way, JC, I watched that video. I mean, the guy beats a big black kid with a belt. It's whatever. You know, of course, the Negroes over at World Hip Hop Star, whatever that stupid site is, I'm sure they loved it. They love watching niggas beat each other up. They love that violent crap. They get off on that. And that stuff does not impress me. Yeah, okay, he's still sending me more messages. Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's Al. Police My Ass, Sting's album, Ten Summoner Tales. What, that song is not the Police? That's just Sting? All right, whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter whether or not the Police is the backup. Anytime I hear Sting, it's the Police. I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, it's the goddamn Police. Was it a band without it, without Sting? What, Andy and whatever what's-the-name's name was? They were nothing without him. It's Sting or nothing. As far as I'm concerned, Sting is the Police. The rest of those two guys are his deputies. That's what you might say, Sal. But Sting is the Police. Anyway, that's just me. Anyway, but I do like that song. You're right. That is Sting in the later years. He came calm, very, very calm and mellow. I like some of the other stuff that Police have done. But anyway, I've always been a fan. Not all that stuff. Can you turn that Negro garbage down? All right, whatever. I appreciate it. Whatever. Now, I have to deal with sometimes the fact that deep down, I married the opposite of me. I love her to death, folks. But as many say that I'm a white man trapped in a black man's body, there is a black woman trapped inside my white woman. Okay? There is a black woman trapped inside this white woman.
I'm just saying got no melanin.
Yeah, she lacks melanin. She's an albino. That's what she is. She's an albino negra. By the way, if you don't know, that's what it is that I call black women. Negras. There's Negroes and Negras. My wife is an undercover Negra. Anyway, Oscar nominations took place today. Who's excited?
Nobody.
Nobody is excited. I'm looking at this list of Oscar nominations. the best picture, Beast of the Southern Wild.
What?
What the F was that? Silver Linings Playbook, I know that film. Zero Dark Thirty. How did this movie get nominated? It comes out tomorrow. It's coming out in 2013, yet it's nominated for last year's nominations. I don't know. Lincoln, Les Mis, Life of Pi, Amour, Django, and Argo. Now, folks, let me tell you something about Argo, because that movie hasn't been talked about. And by the way, we have a special feature tomorrow. We're going to do it every Friday. Who the F is this? We got a special feature tomorrow. Star Wars Matt, good friend of mine, out in Ohio, used to live up in Boston. Star Wars Matt is going to give us some movie reviews of some of the films that have come out just recently. He's a big movie buff. He's like me. And at 9 o'clock tomorrow, we're going to go over some of the films that just came out and whether or not you should spend your hard-earned money to go see this garbage. Okay, so be ready for that tomorrow at 9 o'clock. JC apparently is calling me on his cell phone. JC, did you have a question? Did you need to jump in?
My screen's been frozen. I've been rebooting for the last half hour, 45
That's
minutes.
That's okay. I got you, boss. What's up?
I sent you that video. We did a story on that video last year when it first came out, because people went after him for the way he disciplined his nephew for the bullshit that he put on Facebook.
Well, so what?
Well, since then, shortly thereafter, nobody talked about it, but he turned up dead.
Say again?
The uncle.
Yeah, but that wouldn't consider him a father figure, or a father for that matter. He's just an uncle.
Right, we were talking about father figures at the time, but he turned up dead.
Oh, the father turned up dead? Uncle turned up dead?
Yes.
Oh, well, send me that story. We'll get into it. I'm into Oscars right now. I was trying
to get to you at the time, but I couldn't.
Nobody cares. F that Negro. You know, it happens, homie.
Wow.
It happens. That's the best I can tell you.
We're going to go from
Star Wars, Matt.
Who are properly disciplining the black youth of this country in a fashion that you approve, and you're on the Oscars.
Have you ever had a boombox, JC?
Yeah, I did.
You know that button on the far right-hand side of the tape deck?
Eject?
No, it's far right side. It's the only one button there.
No.
No, that button is called pause. Pause him right now. Put him on pause right now. F that Negro. Like I care. He's beating some kid over gang violence. He probably dies in a barrage of bullets. Que sera, sera, homie. Holler at your boy. Peace. Anyway, I'm talking about the Oscars right now. Whatever. We're talking about the Oscars right now. Anyway, so I want to talk about Argo and Ben Affleck. Now, folks, let me tell you something that isn't being told to you about Ben Affleck and Argo. There's a reason why he got the Best Picture nod, but they nominate like 9 movies. Ben Affleck is not going to get Best Director. Let me explain to you why that's never, ever going to happen to Ben Affleck. 2 reasons, my friends. 2 reasons why Ben Affleck got dissed by the Oscar-worthy. Okay? Those people who sit out there and give out awards and tell you what was the best movie of the year. The reason why Ben Affleck will not get there is because of 2 reasons. 1, Good Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting, nobody expects a guy who wins a screenplay Oscar to become a sensation. But Matt Damon and Ben Affleck did. They were young, they were good looking, they were from the Northeast, they're from Boston. You know, they're a bunch of working stiffs. Oscar doesn't like them. I don't care how liberal they are. They don't like them. You're not going to come all the way from Boston, write a little movie on your Mac computer, and then take the world by storm, and then think that you're going to ever see Oscar Gold again. Not going to happen. You're a bunch of ruffians. F ya. We'll nominate your little film to show that, yeah, we're impartial, but we'll never, ever give you the accolades that you deserve. Never going to happen, Ben Affleck. Knock it off. Now, I understand George Clooney is one of the producers of the movie Argo, so they might consider it just to get George Clooney's fine ass up on the stage to congratulate Ben Affleck. That's what they do in Hollywood. But it's not going to happen. The second reason why Argo got dissed, the reason why Ben Affleck got dissed for this movie is, folks, you don't believe this, but I'm telling you it's the truth. It's because of a Puerto Rican chick. Some sloppy broad named J-Lo. Who Hollywood can't stand.
Hey, you stop talking about J-Lo.
I know you love that J-Lo. Yeah, I know she is. Don't be fooled by the rocks that I got. I'm just Jenny sucking. Anyway, my point was, straight garbage. And that Bennifer thing was a real joke. That Jennifer Lopez, that Bennifer thing was a straight joke. And they're never ever going to treat him with respect. I know they like Jennifer Garner. We like her. She's real down home. She's a down home girl. I like her too. Don't get me wrong. I think that that's the real Bennifer. Jennifer Garner's a sweet girl. I like her. I ain't got nothing against her. She's real sweet. She keeps her mouth shut. She doesn't get into politics. She sets a goddamn trap. Just talks about acting. Takes care of her kids and shuts her face. Ben Affleck, on the other hand, nobody likes you. And that Bennifer thing, that really, really destroyed you, my friend. That really, really did a number on you. So you can forget about it. The other Oscar nominees in here, check this out. Best Director, Ang Lee, Life of Pi. All you need is an Indian boy and a CGI, computer-generated tiger. You get an Oscar nomination. That's all it takes. Ang Lee. Last movie he was nominated for, what was the last big thing he did? Brokeback Mountain. A movie of love. Two gay cowboys cheating on their wives.
Is that what that was really about?
Wait, Brokeback Mountain? Come on.
Yeah, I never seen
it. Well, why would you? Everybody said it was this beautiful love story of two men. Yes, two men screwing each other and destroying the sanctity of marriage against their wives.
It was a great movie.
Stop lying. No, was it?
Yeah,
a true love story? All of these women sit up there going, what a true love story. It wasn't a true love story. It was a story of deception and homosexuality.
It was a great backline movie.
Listen to me. You've got Anne Hathaway and Michelle Williams. Two beautiful women. And Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger say, I don't want to bank these beautiful broads that I got children with. I want to screw you, homeboy. What a great love story.
And
they bring
their
butt sex back home to their wives where they're having unprotected sex and possibly infecting them with a disease. But this was a true love story. Oscar loved it.
Of course. Michael Peter was there.
Hold on. Sal said, JC giving props to Brokeback? What the F?
It was a great movie.
I can't. can't take it. This is too funny. Anyway, moving on. Let's go a little further. Okay. All right. Naomi Watts. Yeah, I could go for it. Naomi Watts, Jessica Chastain, Jennifer Lawrence, Emmanuel Riva, and I can't pronounce this person, Quvenzhane Wallace. I don't know what movie there is because I've only got the nominee. Best actor, Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln. This guy, listen, he never loses.
I want to see that one.
Is on the dais, he wins. He wins. Somebody, come on, somebody that name in a movie where he plays the oil merchant, the oil guy. Something about blood and something. You know, when he says that line, and oh, I'll come over here and go and tell your milkshake. He won for that one, too. Every time that man comes out there, and he's my left foot, Daniel Day-Lewis. He kicks ass. Comes over to America, he wins every one of those awards. What was the name of that movie, JC?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't place the title. I know what you're talking about, but he is pretty good, though.
Daniel Day-Lewis is coming in to kick everybody's ass no matter what. It's
he murders it like Anthony Hopkins.
No, Anthony Hopkins doesn't win like this. He said, there will be blood. That's the one. Every time that man is nominated for a film, he kicks ass. So you can forget about it. Whoever's up against him, and I hear Denzel Washington's on the list for Flight. I didn't hear anything about that movie other than
Denzel Washington's role.
Yeah, that was pretty damn good, too.
What's that?
Flight was pretty damn good.
You saw the movie Flight?
Yes.
Did you watch it bootleg?
Yes.
Of course you did. Of course you did. Let me see. My Left Foot. Let me see. He won. He was nominated. What did he win? They don't show what it is that he won. Okay, Academy Award for Best Actor for My Left Foot. Let me see. What else did he win an Oscar for? I know he was nominated for... Was he nominated for Gangs of New York? Academy Award nominated for Best Actor in Gangs of New York. He didn't win that one.
No Girl with a Golden Tattoo?
There Will Be Blood. Academy Award for Best Actor. I know there's another one that he won. Or was it just those two?
Hey, isn't this year a Girl with a Dragon Tattoo up?
No, that's last year, man.
Oh. That had Victor Maitland in it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's never winning an award. You can forget about that. But you can forget about it. When Daniel Day-Lewis gets nominated, he wins. That's it. With the exception of Gangs in New York, which was straight garbage. You never ever win for a Martin Scorsese film anyway. Unless your name is Robert De Niro. So there's never ever going to be anybody who's going to beat him. Who's running up against him for best actor here? Daniel Day-Lewis, Denzel Washington, Hugh Jackman, you can forget about it. It's never going to happen to you. Bradley Cooper, keep making the Hangover movies. Nobody cares. All right, this will be the last time you'll ever be nominated. And Joaquin Phoenix, you're too weird. You're the Jim Carrey of dramatic actors. Nobody cares about you. This goes to Daniel Day-Lewis. Right now, I'm putting the front runners, Daniel Day-Lewis and Denzel Washington. And Denzel, trust me, if this becomes your year, okay, you get one black actor with two Academy Awards, I don't want to hear any more crap about black people winning, all right, for about 5 years. Don Cheadle can't even get nominated for being in that movie. I don't want to hear it anymore. Best supporting actor, Sally Field. She has the one thing. What's that?
He's awesome.
Whom? Sally Field?
No, Cheadle.
Oh, Don Cheadle, yeah, I like him too. Sally Field, Anne Hathaway, Jackie Weaver. Helen Hunt is up again? Doing what? Helen Hunt's in a film? Yes, I do. Amy Adams, I like this broad. She's in everything, but Amy Adams, I like her. Christopher Waltz, who plays the vigilante who teaches Django how to kill whites. That's the only Quentin Tarantino award that's up, with the exception of some other garbage that's in. Christopher Waltz, Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master, Robert De Niro, Alan Arkin, who's up again, and Tommy Lee Jones. Now listen to me. Tommy Lee Jones is going to win this. Tommy Lee Jones hasn't won an Oscar since he starred in The Fugitive. What, are you sleeping on me again?
Who?
You.
No, I'm thinking about Tommy Lee Jones.
You must sweat in considerably cool temperature.
No, I am. You can see, in my room, you can see your breath. Not really, seriously. I got the window open and the fan on.
Okay, I'm just...
No, I'm dead ass serious.
Original screenplay, Flight Zero Dark 30. There's nothing original about this screenplay, knock it off. Django Unchained, nothing original about that. Isn't this a remake? Amour, Moonrise Kingdom. I don't know this movie. This adapted screenplay. This is Beast of the Southern Wild, Argo, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, and A Life of Pi. Nobody cares.
I don't know about Lincoln.
What's that?
I don't know about Lincoln.
Yeah, adapted screenplay. Look, Lincoln, it's 12 nominations. Lincoln's going to come back with at least 6. Okay, without it, beyond the shadow of a doubt, we're going to stick.
You know who's going to get snubbed?
Who's going to get snubbed?
Is Fox up for any?
Whom?
Fox.
Oh, Jamie Foxx?
Yeah.
He already got snubbed. He didn't even get a nomination.
Oh, okay, good.
He didn't get nominated for anything.
Oh, okay, good.
Samuel L. Jackson was supposed to get a Best Supporting Actor for this House Slave. He got this.
Really?
Not even nominated.
Tell me they nominated DiCaprio.
No, they snubbed him, too.
They snubbed the whole damn film.
The whole damn film got dissed.
Wow.
Nobody cares about this Quentin Tarantino thing. Just because you get buzzed doesn't mean that you deserve to win an Oscar. Knock it off. Nobody cared. I'll be honest with you. I'm only going to watch the Oscars for one thing.
What's that?
And that's Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, of course.
Yep, Seth MacFarlane and Family Show is going to be hosting it. It happens in a couple of weeks, and that's what I'm going to be watching. We will see you guys tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel.
Great television come out of Connecticut.
Pimp of the year. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 3:30 Radio. I'm out of here. Follow me into the sun, let your